It's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use, and I do suggest that you have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write down the pertinent information. You never know when it just might help out. Let's start off with announcements here. The California Native Plant Society Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration this Saturday, April 6th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. Spring is here, and if you have not gone out to look at the wildflowers, well, it's time. With no late winter and below normal spring rains, the ground is beginning to dry, and springtime may be short this year. Despite a poor rainy season, we have made a significant dent removing invasive non-native French broom from Quail Hollow. And if you're going to come, do bring some binoculars along. The birds are definitely feeling the vernal bliss. We may see western bluebirds and black-headed grosbeaks and maybe some red crossbills. See you out there? How do you get there? Well, go up Graham Hill Road out of Santa Cruz and you come down into Felton, turn right at the light, head up East Ziandy Road about 2 miles, turn left on Quail Hollow. Half a mile up on the right is the park entrance. Park on the left side of the entrance road in the gravel parking lot. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. The program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Do wear comfortable layered clothing. Bring something to drink and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine, but if things get particularly unpleasant, they call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring your gloves and water. And once again, that's 10 a.m. this Saturday, April 6th at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. And unfortunately, the tree sitters blocking the Willits bypass route on Highway 101 in Willits have been pulled from the trees. In this story by Linda Williams of the Willits News, a large contingent of California Highway Patrol officers removed 4 tree sitters Tuesday morning and was in the process of removing the remaining one at 4:30 p.m., and I'll have an update later in the story. Amanda Warbler-Sensman, who announced she was on a hunger strike March 28th after spending 2 months in a pine tree at the south end of the bypass route, was the first person removed. Officers suspended in man lifts positioned themselves on 2 sides of her tree and removed her in the pre-dawn hours. She was taken to the Mendocino County Jail on trespassing charges. As Sensman was being driven away in a squad car, Sarah Grusky ran after the car and was promptly arrested. Will Parrish ran onto the surface of Highway 101 and sat down. Officers then dragged him off the highway and placed him under arrest for trespassing and obstructing an officer. And shortly after the scene was secure, Warbler's pine tree was cut down, and my understanding is it was literally minutes later. CHP and Caltrans vehicles, complete with flares, had lined up bumper-to-bumper on both sides of the Highway 101 near Sensiman's tree sit in the darkness of the morning in anticipation of her extraction. Shortly after the arrest, officers began shifting to the East Hill Road site to begin removing the next 2 tree sitters, identified as Martin Katz and Gene Weilbach. These tree sitters had established nests in a small grove of pine trees on March 21st. In anticipation of the raid, they had pulled their platforms up higher into the trees earlier in the week. The duo had also established a rope and pulley network in the tops of most of the trees in the grove. They used this high-level network to move aerobatically from tree to tree as CHP officers approached. Officers used the newly created roadway between Highway 101 and East Hill Road to mass their forces and hold protesters and other observers behind the bypass fencing. 2 large man lifts, one with 2 officers and one with 3 officers, had the main task of removing the 2 men from the trees. Officers first began cutting and removing the ropes in an attempt to reduce the tree sitters' mobility. The tree sitters retaliated by throwing feces from their own waste buckets at the officers. The officers persevered, eventually confining the 2 sitters into 1 tree. A small black cat was removed from one of the platforms by officers and handed off to the protesters. Officers gave the 2 tree sitters several opportunities to surrender once it became clear they were not interested in leaving the tree voluntarily. One of the CHP officers went into the top of the tree and began climbing down to capture them. The other officers remained in the boom trucks holding shotguns containing beanbag pellets. After a game of cat and mouse, officers caught up with Katz, who had tied himself into the tree. As Katz continued to struggle, refusing to get into the man lift bucket with the officers, an officer in another bucket shot several times at Katz's lower extremities with the rubber bullets. Officers took him into custody and were transporting him to a local hospital, before taking him to Mendocino County Jail. Katz told witnesses on the ground he was okay, but had been shot in each leg and in the gut. The officers who effected the extraction were specially trained members of the CHP Special Weapons and Tactics teams with climbing experience, said CHP Officer Steve Krull. Katz violently resisted efforts to arrest him, said Krull. At one point, he grabbed onto an officer at above 70 feet off the ground. This left the officers with no choice but to fire non-lethal beanbags to help secure him. Katz also swung a rope with a metal carabiner at officers as they tried to take him into custody, said Krull. Katz was arrested on suspicion of trespassing, assault on a peace officer, obstructing a peace officer, and assault with a deadly weapon. I wonder if that was the carabiner. Probably not. Wyback was arrested on suspicion of obstructing a peace officer and trespassing. A large crowd of witnesses on the ground who had gathered at the fence line to watch the annex at first believed the officers had used lethal force to secure Katz. They swarmed over and under the fence, and it took several minutes for officers to push them back. Scott Tenney was arrested on the ground on suspicion of trespassing and obstructing a police officer. But once Katz had been taken into custody, Wyback willingly got into the man lift bucket and surrendered. The crowd of officers began to shift toward the other two tree sit locations by afternoon. Caltrans and Highway Patrol officers had removed all five tree sitters within Caltrans right away for the new Willits bypass by the end of the day Tuesday. The last two tree sitters extricated were Travis Eagle Joachimson, 30, of Lancaster, and Mark Falcon Herbert, 51, of Willits. Both men were arrested for trespassing, and the trees were cut down after they had been removed, according to Caltrans. While Joachimson was cited for resisting arrest, Herbert surrendered peacefully as soon as the officers approached him. The officers helped Herbert from his perch and took him away in handcuffs. All of those arrested Tuesday were released from Mendocino County Jail shortly after booking, except for Martin Rain Katz, 24. Katz remains in custody and has been charged by District Attorney David Eister with resisting arrest and three counts of battery on a police officer. Bail is set at $60,000, and Katz's preliminary hearing is scheduled for April 17th. The DA's office is still reviewing the other protesters' files, and no formal charges on them have yet been filed in court. Katz was the tree sitter who allegedly threw feces and swung a carabiner on the end of a rope at officers attempting to take him into custody. Officers shot Katz with a shotgun modified to only fire non-lethal beanbag shells to subdue him. The Kevlar beanbags resemble small socks filled with number 9 lead shot, according to CHP spokesman Steve Krull. These weapons are standard issue to every CHP area throughout the state. Amanda Warbler-Sensman, who was the first tree sitter and the only one removed in the early Tuesday morning fog, remains on her hunger strike. Her supporters are planning a rally this Saturday to show their continued support, and I'll have information on that in just a second. California Senator Noreen Evans issued the following statement in response to Tuesday's action, quote, CHP was deployed to remove the protesters of the Willits Bypass Projects just hours before I was set to meet with the director of Caltrans to have my questions answered. According to some reports, protesters in the trees were extracted by CHP using rubber bullets. That's actually not true. It was the beanbags. Moving on with her quote, and that CHP officers significantly outnumbered protesters. I'm shocked and dismayed at what seems to be an excessive use of force on unarmed protesters thus far. I feel Caltrans and CHP have been slow to respond to my questions and quick to act regarding the bypass project. It was also extremely disturbing to learn that the press was excluded from observing the removal of the protesters. I had asked to be informed on a daily basis prior to any extraordinary action on this project, as I represent the 1.3 million Californians living in the 2nd Senate District where this project is taking place. Regretfully, that did not happen today. I did meet with Caltrans Director Malcolm Doherty on Tuesday to express my dismay at today's events. I have additionally requested an immediate meeting with CHP Commissioner Joseph Farrow. I urge everyone to remain calm and for protesters to remain peaceful in their opposition. Following the April 2nd meeting, Caltrans Director Malcolm Doherty said, having met with Senator Evans and discussed the Willits Bypass project, we look forward to working closely with her office to keep her informed and to address any further questions or concerns she may have. Caltrans is committed to completing this project safely, which has wide regional support and will improve traffic and air quality for the city of Willits and provide a long-term boost to the local and regional economy. Now, the Save Our Little Lake Valley group is sponsoring an afternoon of music and speakers in support of the Tree Sitters this Saturday, April 6th, from 2 to 6 p.m. in Recreation Grove in Willits. The event has been named the Rally for the Valley, and attendance is free. It will be preceded by a bicycle ride around the valley. Anyone wishing to take part in the ride should bring their bikes to Recreation Grove at 10 a.m. And once again, that rally from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, April 6th at Recreation Grove in Willits, California. And that's an unfortunate end to that very brave tree sit. And I hope they can find other ways to stop that project. It will destroy a very pretty part of the Northern California area. Moving to the Buffalo Field campaign's update from the field. We are very pleased to report that treaty hunting has finally ended and no wild bison were killed this week, either by hunters or motorists. Snow is rapidly melting, bluebirds and meadowlarks have returned, and the ice of Hebgen Lake is giving in to the blue waters beneath. Throughout the Yellowstone area, wild buffalo are migrating towards their calving grounds. These spring migrations are keeping Buffalo Field Campaign patrols extremely busy along the highways, specifically in the West Yellowstone area. Highways 191 and 287, heavily used by locals, tourists, and semi-trucks seeking a shortcut, dangerously interrupt this critical migration corridor. The Buffalo Field Campaign is out day and night trying to create safe passage for wild buffalo and helping motorists to reach their destinations without impacts with bison. Buffalo Field Campaign would like to send out a special thank you to the Montana Department of Transportation. The good folks of MDOT here at Hebgen Basin have upped their efforts. They have changed the marquee signs to read Bison on Road, 55 miles per hour, and dug out areas in the snowbanks along Highway 191 to give buffalo an easy way to move around from the road. While all these efforts make a huge difference, ultimately we need wildlife crossing infrastructure, which includes bridges and tunnels that allow bison and other wildlife to cross roads without ever having to set foot upon them. Unfortunately, as the beauty of spring unfolds, the Montana Department of Livestock has been scouting the landscape for wild bison, readying themselves for their abusive and necessary hazing operations. Buffalo Field Campaign is ready, too, standing with the buffalo and watching the Montana Department of Livestock's every move. After 3 years of waiting to be heard, the Buffalo Field Campaign's lawsuit to keep all of the quarantined descendants of Yellowstone buffalo herd public and tribal wildlife has had its day in court before Montana District Court Judge Holly Brown. Plaintiffs Western Watersheds Project, Buffalo Field Campaign, Gallatin Wildlife Association, and the Yellowstone Buffalo Foundation filed suit against Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks for a deal it struck with Turner Enterprises, giving away public buffalo for private commercial use. The deal privatizes three of four buffalo offspring born in captivity on Turner's Green Ranch west of Bozeman, Montana, in exchange for keeping the buffalo in quarantine for 5 years. From the time these buffalo calves were trapped in Yellowstone National Park and taken from their family groups for an experiment to produce brucellosis-free buffalo, the promise Montana made and broke was to keep all of these public buffalo, public and tribal wildlife forever. While we await a court decision, whether the deal stands or not is largely up to Governor Steve Bullock, who has promised to fight attempts to privatize and commercialize public wildlife and protect fair chase hunting. The public will find out if Governor Bullock's promise holds true for the buffalo. And if you want to align your life with your ideals, come to work for the Buffalo Field Campaign. We have immediate openings for field volunteers. Between now and June, we need people to staff our frontline patrols. In the summer, we'll need education and outreach volunteers to represent the Buffalo Field Campaigns and the Buffalo to Yellowstone visitors. If you are interested, passionate, and hardworking, please visit the website for information on volunteering with the Buffalo Field Campaign. If you'd like more information, go to the Buffalo Field Campaign's website, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. If you want to send them a donation and they need those, Go to their webpage, figure out if it's cash or something else that you can donate, and send it to the Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, the zip code 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call. Area code 406-646-0070. Once again, that number, 406-646-0070. And do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And Exxon is replacing oiled Arkansas lawns, and their ruptured pipeline is still shut. Reporting by Kristen Hayes, editing by Bob Bergdorfer of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. ExxonMobil Corporation on Wednesday was digging out oiled lawns to replace them with fresh sod in an Arkansas neighborhood where a crude oil pipeline ruptured last week, but the line remained shut with no estimate of when it would restart, the company said. While response crews had begun removing oiled dirt and grass around houses in the subdivision, a plan to excavate the area around the pipeline breach remained under development for U.S. regulators' review. The company's Pegasus pipeline, which can transport more than 90,000 barrels of crude a day from Texas to Illinois, ruptured last Friday in the subdivision in Mayflower, Arkansas, about 20 miles northeast of Little Rock, Arkansas. Exxon told the U.S. Transportation Department's Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration that the company estimated between 3,500 and 5,000 barrels of crude leaked, but the company has not yet qualified its public release estimate of several thousand barrels. The PUMPSA noted Exxon's specific estimate in a corrective order the agency issued late Tuesday that requires Exxon to develop a pipeline restart plan, test the damaged part of the line, and get regulatory approval to restart post-repair. PHMSA's order said Exxon learned of the problem when pressure dropped in the pipeline and had shut valves on either side of the breach within 16 minutes. Crude bubbled up to the surface and leaked onto residential lawns and streets and into storm drains. Local responders quickly built dikes to block it from reaching nearby Lake Conway, a popular fishing lake, before Exxon crews had mobilized to put booms on the water as a precaution. They saved the lake with that effort, and Barnum spokesman for the Arkansas Department of Health told Reuters on Wednesday. Exxon spokesman Alan Jeffers said on Wednesday that the lake remained free of oil. Alan Dodson, Faulkner County judge in the county that houses the subdivision, said the dikes built from dirt and rock held strong in the rain. "We've shored them up over time. The response is going well," he said on Wednesday. 22 affected homes were evacuated shortly after the rupture remained empty on Wednesday as Exxon and U.S. Environmental Protection Agency crews continually monitored air quality in the subdivision, Barnum said. The state's health department, which will give the final approval for affected residents to return to their homes, was evaluating air quality data collected by both crews. Barnum said levels of benzene and other compounds that accompany crude oil have been coming down steadily since the beginning, but evacuation orders remained in place. "The situation is improving rapidly and they are moving quickly," he said of Exxon's cleanup efforts. "At the very least, in a phased way, some or most of these people can go home pretty soon." He declined to specify if pretty soon meant this week, the coming weekend, or later, noting that rain in the area may lengthen the cleanup that could be faster in good weather. Exxon also said on Wednesday that its contractor, U.S. Environmental Services, has a wildlife rehabilitation operation on site. So far, the oiled animals these crews have worked with included 16 ducks, 7 turtles, 9 reptiles, and a beaver. And beavers have suffered severe burns after helping to stop an oil spill in this story by Sharon Seltzer of the Heaven Can Wait Animal Society and brought to me on the care2.com website. 6 beavers at Utah's Willard Bay State Park are being called superheroes after helping to contain an oil leak from pouring into the bay and marshland. Sadly, 3 of the beavers were severely burned while the family built a dam that blocked a large portion of the spill. The 27,000 gallons of crude diesel oil leaked from a split in a Chevron pipeline last week. It's the 3rd leak for that pipeline, which runs from Salt Lake City to Spokane, Washington, and that has happened in the last 3 years. All of the beavers were transported to the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center of Northern Utah for care. It took volunteers 6 hours to thoroughly bathe away all the oil stuck to their fur. 40 large bottles of Dawn dish soap were used to gently remove the oil. Three of the animals suffered burns on their skin and eyes, had only patches of fur left on their bodies. They are being given special care to heal their wounds and put on medication to prevent further complications. Two of the beavers are under the age of one, and a third is a new mother. Late last week, one of the animals was still showing signs of nausea and respiratory problems, but the other two are starting to move around in their cages and eat. Caregivers say they are taking their recovery one day at a time. Hopefully, the beavers will be able to eventually return to the wild. Phil Douglas, spokesperson for the Department of Wildlife Resources, said protecting other animals and plants is part of beavers' daily routine. Beavers are natural homemakers. He credited beaver dams or lodges for drawing moose to Utah because moose still like still waters for drinking. The dams also keep the water cool for trout and make surrounding areas healthier by inviting more plant growth. Utah Governor Gary Herbert is calling the latest spill unacceptable. He wants Chevron to run a more proactive operation in the state of Utah. The oil giant has been fined $400,000 for the two earlier leaks from its pipeline. Chevron issued a statement offering their regrets for the incident and the impact it has had on the environment. They have more than 130 people working round the clock to clean up the oil. And a bill to create Berryessa Snow Mountain National Conservation Area has been submitted. On March 7th, Senator Barbara Boxer and Congressman Mike Thompson of California introduced the Berryessa Snow Mountain National Conservation Area Act. The legislation would designate the Berryessa Snow Mountain region as a national conservation area to better manage and protect close to 350,000 acres of federal lands in Lake, Mendocino, Napa, Solano, and Yolo counties in California, and to promote tourism and outdoor recreation across the region. With its magnificent vistas and diverse wildlife, the Berryessa Snow Mountain region is one of California's greatest natural treasures, Senator Boxer said. This bill will expand opportunities for outdoor recreation and help preserve this spectacular area for current and future generations. The Berryessa Snow Mountain region is a national treasure. We have a responsibility to preserve it and make sure the region is managed efficiently and responsibly, said Congressman Thompson. Designating the region as a national conservation area will preserve the land, help our local economies, and put all federal lands under one management plan. The bill does not impact private land in any way. It will only protect and enhance the public lands for those who live in and visit the Berryessa Snow Mountain region. The new national conservation area would cover land stretching more than 100 miles from Poudre Creek, just below Lake Berryessa, up to the peak of Snow Mountain. And I believe that's up by Anderson on the west side of the Central Valley. The area provides a haven for hiking, camping, rafting, and horseback riding, and is home to a diverse array of wildlife, including bald and golden eagles, black bears, and tule elk. And if you'd like more information, go to the website for the California Wilderness Coalition at www.calwild.org. And Palila still declining in Hawaii, in this story by Steve Homer of the American Bird Conservancy. Two recent studies by the U.S. Geological Survey and collaborators including ABC have found that populations of the Palila, a highly endangered honeycreeper found only in subalpine forests on Mauna Kea, Hawaii, have steeply declined over the past 10 years. The study also found that other endemic Hawaiian birds sharing this habitat, including the Hawaii Elapiaio, the Ipapani, and the Iiwi, have been negatively affected. The Palila population peaked in 2003 at nearly 6,500 birds, but dropped to approximately 2,200 birds in the last year, a 66% decline. The species range also continued to contract. It was detected in a block of less than 6 square miles of forest, despite surveys throughout the species' nearly 95 square miles of designated critical habitat on Mauna Kea. In 2008, Palila were consistently found in a forested area more than 4 times larger. Numerous factors impact Hawaii's subalpine forests, but the two biggest are extreme recent drought and nearly 200 years of browsing by exotic grazing animals. Drought reduces food availability, particularly Mumani seeds, the primary Palila food, reducing Palila breeding success and survival. Cattle, goats, and sheep have been grazing on Mauna Kea since their introduction in the early 1800s. These species have destroyed and degraded the native Hawaiian forests and are suppressing regeneration of them, leading to long-term decline of the palila and other bird species. Excessive grazing worsens the effects of drought, as does competition from invasive plants. 2013 will be a year of significant progress for conservation of the palila. The state of Hawaii, with funding support from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, is constructing a 52-mile-long fence to exclude goats, sheep, and cows from the majority of the palila's designated critical habitat within the state's Mauna Kea Forest Reserve and the Ka'ahoi Game Management Area. In addition, a strategy to eradicate the grazing animals from within the fenced area is under development. I think you need to put some hungry hunters in there. The fence could be completed within several years, and implementation of portions of the eradication strategy could come even sooner. If you'd like more information about this, go to the American Bird Conservancy's website at www.abcbirds.org. Turning to biological diversity news, a California bill would ban lead hunting ammo. A new bill in California would remove toxic lead from hunting ammunition and provide important protections for people and wildlife. Assemblyman Anthony Rendon's bill to require non-lead ammo for all hunting in California, AB 711, has been made public, and a hearing is expected soon. The Center for Biological Diversity, which has been working for a decade to get lead out of hunting ammunition, is supporting the bill. If you live in California, you need to speak out for it. Lead that's left in the wild takes a deadly toll on wildlife, poisoning and killing bald eagles, endangered California condors, swans, loons, and millions of other birds yearly. It also poses significant health risks to people eating wild game. A new national poll commissioned by the center finds that 57% of Americans support requiring a switch to non-toxic hunting bullets. Hunters in much of Central and Southern California have been hunting with copper and other lead-free ammunition since 2008, when state regulations required the use of non-lead hunting ammo in the California condor range. Rendon's bill extends the protection from lead poisoning to all wildlife in the state and safeguards human health. And endangered mussels have won a reprieve. A Tennessee coal plant is still dangerous, however. After legal pressure from the Center for Biological Diversity and its allies, the Tennessee Valley Authority has decided not to shut down the most productive hatchery in the country for rearing endangered pink mucket mussels. The Cumberland River Aquatic Center at the 50-year-old Gallatin Fossil Plant has been proposed for closure to make room for expansion of the power plant. Freshwater mussels, like pink muckets, filter water constantly and play an important role in improving water quality throughout the Southeast. Unfortunately, 75% of the region's mussels are now at risk of extinction, which is why the rearing facility is so important. Despite our triumph in saving this special nursery in Tennessee, the Dirty Gallatin plant will undergo an expensive retrofit to let it continue to burn coal. It's a bittersweet victory. The Tennessee Valley Authority has agreed to save the aquatic center, but continues to burn filthy coal, said center biologist Tiara Curry. Saving the mussel nursery is obviously the right thing to do, but continuing to burn coal threatens the survival of mussels and people everywhere. And that's all the time we have for news this week on the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is presented every week on Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. It is also rebroadcast at 3 o'clock on Friday afternoons right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM. And you can also find us on the web at www.freakradio.org. You can also listen in to Radio Free Moscow, KRFP Idaho, at 92.5 FM on Monday nights at 9:30 for the Earth First Update. If you'd like to download a podcast of this show or listen to it online, please go to radioforall.net. That's radioforall.net, and search for the Earth First Update. And I want to thank you for listening, and tune in next week.